On 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show with Aaron the Power Bauer, the Reggae Warrior, Ross Peltier, the Italian Stallion, or Mini, Elliot Minchella, and Robbie Hunter Paul.
Kia ora and g'day and welcome to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show live here at Pulse 2 Studios. The boys are in the house.
Yep.
Good evening.
Hello.
So you know what, we are going live on Periscope as we speak right now, and that's the best that you three could come up with. Nodding your heads. Look at for those of you that are watching, you'll see that these guys never leave their seats as well. I'm trying to encourage them to get up and get animated, you know what I mean, and they're just looking
work
at me
off those pastries that we've been eating in the kitchen.
That's right, pastries. I was teasing Ross about eating too many buns before, but it was actually me, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I love pepper rolls, and you know the.
Cut it in half, well. Though, didn't it?
Because I just wanted to taste it. I did want to eat the second half as well, but I thought they were just being greedy. So how's the week been for the boys?
Good week.
Weekend been and gone. Challenge Cup, massive game over at Warrington. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, it was a good day out, wasn't it, for fans, everybody, for lads. It was a good experience. You know, we didn't obviously get the result or cup upset, but everyone thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a good day out, a good experience.
John was very complimentary about the team and the fact that you guys didn't give up. Taking into account, you guys do operate currently in League One, and that is one of the Super League teams that is killing it at the moment on their home turf as well. What was it like actually just taking on board and playing at, you know, at Warrington as a stadium, full stop?
Yeah, it was good. You know, Bulls fans were there in force. It was loud. They were louder than Warrington fans. So, you know, we were loving it. It was a big day for us in the occasion itself. Just, you know, play a championship last year and then playing League One this year, and to be like, I took a carry, got quite a quick play ball. I think I just got a quick play ball against Chris Hill. That's not bad, that. So yeah,
did you get up and go, I am the Reggae Warrior?
So yeah, I'll think it
up. As you were watching him play in the World Cup final last year, I've just dusted you.
Yeah, every time I find my front, I'm like, go on, yeah.
Simple creatures, these front rowers, aren't they? You know, the little ones.
Easily pleased.
You know, when you think, oh, look, I've had a good game. I've scored a try, I've set up some tries. These guys, oh, I landed on my front.
I actually did score a try. Oh. That was chopped off. The in-goal touch official, whatever he is, but I don't know what point he's there, because he said it was a try, but, you know, it didn't get given, so.
Yeah. Was your name in the paper the next day?
No, it won't.
Well, it wasn't a try.
John Keir said it was a try, so I'll take that.
Let's set up a vote right now. If JK says it's a try, it's a try. Well, how was it for you, Mini?
It was a good day. Obviously, disappointing with the result, but similar to Ross, really good to play in front of the fans again. They were absolutely awesome. We come out for warm-up and, you know, they're so loud, I couldn't believe it. Obviously playing against some great players, some England internationals, and test yourself sort of thing. It was good. Obviously disappointing for a result, but a lot of positives to take out. So, yeah, all-round good day, I suppose.
Yeah, learned a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
Challenging.
I played like in out of position, I suppose, in the halves, up against like Tyrone Roberts, who was opposite me. So, I've been looking back at some of the stuff he's done. And, I'll take some stuff out of that. So, we're not too down about it anyway, put it that way. So, onwards and upwards.
Onwards and upwards. Aaron, what about yourself?
Well, I'm a bit upset like Ross because he scored a legitimate try, didn't he? Now, rugby league, some bookmakers can make a hash of the odds sometimes. They can price players up wrong. So I had a look on one betting website. They didn't realise that Mini were playing halfback and they had him quite chunky odds to score at any time. So a couple of quid on Mini, backed him, and then he's a try scoring machine. Then I looked a bit further down, Peltier. Thought, I'll have a couple of quid on Pellier as well.
4,000 to 1.
Loyal to the show. So I thought, I'll have a couple of quid on Ross as well anyway. I kept myself pretty cool and pretty calm throughout the game until the big man crashes over the line, throws the ball in the air. And I'm thinking, I'm in here. I've shouted, I was like, go on! I'm in here, quite a bit of money, can go out tonight. for official said try. Referee chalked it off. So
linesman said try.
Yeah.
I'm disgusted.
The crowd said try.
It was just
and
a
ref. Referee said nah.
So I'm going to set a crowdfunding page up for the money that I'm owed. and I'm going to split it with Ross because he put the effort in.
Yeah,
but I enjoyed it.
You know what? I was when you briefly mentioned this in the canteen. I was thinking to myself, oh, isn't that nice? You got real excited about one of your mates scoring a try and you jumped up celebrating. I didn't realise you had put any money on it.
Always.
Gamble
responsibly.
It was just being really nice. Gamble responsibly, yeah.
But I enjoyed the whole Cup weekend. I did four games in 4 days, two Super League and then two Challenge Cup. And on Sunday night, I sort of had a little bit of a step back and I thought, that's probably the most enjoyable two days of rugby I've covered in quite a long time, because Bradford did themselves really proud, the fans were incredible, and it was just a good advert for League One. Obviously the boys, as John said, gave it their all, you know, they never gave in, which is proven by the fact they scored the last try of the game. They kept going till the end. And then York, which I'm sure we'll touch on as well, that was just brilliant. 3,000 there at York watching Catalans, and it just goes to show that there's life outside of Super League. Everyone's quick to pump all the money into Super League and leave some clubs to die outside the top flight. Well, you've got Bradford, you've got York, you've got Doncaster, who are going to play Bradford this weekend. That's League One. Featherstone, Halifax, London, Lee, all outside Super League. The game's stronger than it's ever been outside Super League. And it's a shame some people are trying to change that. But it was a good advert for League One in particular, I thought, the weekend. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I think we're going to get into a little bit more detail when we are in the second segment of the show. On that point, exactly. I was just thinking, though, a fantastic turnout by the supporters once again also. By you guys, it allows you to go the extra mile, doesn't it? But one of the things that I was quite pleased of, because I watched the highlights back, because obviously the streaming issue, the majority of the tries that Warrington scored were all on the edges. Yeah. And that kind of tells you something.
Yeah.
It kind of suggests to you that you've thickened up the middle of the park, you've worked hard, and if there's going to be any space, let them score out on the corner.
Yeah, the one message we had at team meeting, didn't we? And John said, if they're going to score, make them score in corners. Don't let them come through us.
Yeah, that's what we were saying. I was on the left edge and we were saying, you know, me, my centre and winger, if they're going to score and let the winger score, that's fine. It's not fine, but, you know, they've had to work for it. Mm-hmm. Rather than busting through the middle or busting through a gap. If they're scoring the wing, then it must have been good playing. You hold your hands up and say, you know, they've worked for that try. And that's, like you say, a majority of them, they were like that. So, fair enough.
All right, well, let's have a look at the Challenge Cup sixth round. Some really, really interesting draws there. I think the pick of the round's got to be Castleford versus St Helens. Cass at home.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see Benny Barber rip it up. I think Cass are struggling, aren't they? A lot of injuries out wide, so it may be good to see how they go now.
But we all know that Cass at home are a different animal than Cass going to St Helens, for example.
Yeah, but what edge is it? Left edge? They haven't got no left edge left. I think, you know, they had James Clare's gone, Greg Eden's injured, Gary Lowe's had his issue, so he won't be playing. Who's going to be on it?
Jai Hitchcock
is at Bradford. So that's four wingers gone. And Saints killing it wide.
I'm liking Toronto Warrington, although it's going to be Warrington Toronto, isn't it? They're going to flip it, but there's Sims and another one, O'Brien, who played for Warrington, now playing for Toronto. Toronto are spending a lot of money, let's not pretend they're not. They're spending more than some Super League clubs, I imagine, so it's going to be a good test to see how far they've come. They've obviously got aspirations to get into Super League, but for the first time there's a bit of a story in it in almost every game. I mean, Hull, probably you would say Hull would have wanted a non-Super League team, but Featherway, it's not a gimme these days, is that? You know, Feather going really well. And
Feather killing it
good,
at the moment.
Good for Whitehaven, the last League One team left in, to get a good draw as well. I mean, I'm sure they'll make the most of a trip to Catalans, won't they? Probably after the game rather than before it. But, it's a great cup draw.
Them all up there in Cumbria and they said, Catalans, Whitehaven, yes!
Yeah, I'm sure if they could have picked which way around they wanted that tie to be, I'm sure they would have wanted it in Perpignan.
That's the draw I wanted last round. I'm like, Catalan, oh, I'll take that.
Draw of the round, that.
I think another tricky game you have to mention would be Leeds Centurions and Salford Red Devils. Mm. Leeds turned the season around. Yeah. They've found their form once again. I mean, I think they always were going to. But the Reds are a little bit hit and miss. Obviously, the massive win that they had against Wakefield on the weekend.
Yeah, against Peltz's boys. They're on fire, aren't they?
Peltz was talking them up last weekend once again, wasn't he?
Yeah,
no. My boys are back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then they just...
And they got smacked.
I think they're gone now. That's them done for.
Their heads went, didn't they?
Yeah. I think for Salford, though, Robert Louis went off injured, didn't he? Yeah, so that were a worry for them.
Yeah, but he went off injured early.
Yeah, half an hour.
And so so for the rest of the game, where they actually racked up the points, actually he wasn't even a part of it. They even had Tyrone McCarthy was kicking goals. And he got the goal-kicking duties by... Everyone else not wanting to. It's one of those things. He's a senior player. So, well, if someone's got to kick it, actually, he did all right. He did all right.
No, that's a big game. Obviously, like you said, Lee have come in a bit of form now, and especially with them at home, they'll be hoping to get a big crowd behind them. It should be quite an even game. And I think anybody could win that.
This Catalans game against Whitehaven. Now, we've been talking about Catalan, the disastrous start to the season that they've had. Could they hang their hat on a good Challenge Cup run?
I don't think they'll have one. Look what York did. If for him to have one, I reckon they should have blown away
league
one team.
You they're going to progress through to the next round.
Well, that's eight,
though. Yeah, they're not going to do
that. You would argue Whitehaven's probably going to spend 3 days on the, living it up in the south of France.
Yeah, the Whitehaven, though. Nah, Cass aren't going to have no cup run. I mean, the Cass Catalan aren't going to have a cup run. No way.
Nah, you never know.
You heard it here first. All right, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to pull apart this discussion ongoing about League One Championship and the Super League. But before we do that, let's have a look at the traffic.
It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Welcome back to the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show, live in the studio with the power that is Aaron Bauer, the Italian Stallion, Elliot Mincella, and the reggae warrior himself, Ross Peltier. I got this from Aaron, actually, because Aaron posted a message on Twitter straight after the match, just talking about the Bradford Bulls supporters. And I just wanted to have a chat about the sport itself, protecting its marketplaces. And the sport of rugby league is actually, you know, with the 4 or 5 years worth of turmoil that has been ongoing with the Bradford Bulls. In other codes you've seen around the world, the governing body sort of stepped in to make sure that they protect that as a marketplace. One of the original sort of Super Four, Super League teams that sort of helped grow the brand of the Super League internationally. Obviously, Bradford City itself is actually a very large city in population, I think just short of 600,000 people, which puts it in the top 10 in the country. That obviously equals bread and butter, so to speak. You guys get to enjoy the benefits of that original growth in the early parts of it by playing week in, week out. What is that truly like?
We're playing in front of, you know, all the fans and crowds that Bradford get. It's, you know, it's massive. Being from Bradford, it's a privilege to play for such a club with such history. Do you know what I mean? It's funny sometimes when we go away, we get a lot of people, fans are thinking, you know, you're just a small club in Yorkshire, but, you know, a few World Cup challenges and all that. It's a big thing, I think. Yeah, every time we play.
Super League titles,
yeah, you realise the enormity of the city. Like, just look at Bradford City, like how big of a club they've been, even though they haven't been near Premier League for a long time, I think. You know, it's just a city in itself.
It has a legacy, doesn't it? Yeah. And it stays with the generation that were involved. Well, one of the things that I want to have a discussion about in this segment of the show is just whether or not what is really being set up in regards to the future of the sport. We're still leaderless, so to speak. Ralph Rimmer is still only holding the title of interim CEO. There's conversations that there will be Robert Elson will come into position once he finishes up his commitments with Everton, but nothing set in stone until it actually happens. So that's, you know, that's just what people are suggesting is going to happen. The Super League clubs are still in that, as we understand it, the Super League clubs or a portion of the Super League clubs are still in that position where they want to pull back more of the resources into the Super League for it to be purely and simply that flagship competition. And then equally underneath it, you got the Championship and League One that have come together to build a stronger body, to have a stronger voice, a unified voice in regards to the value of the game up and down the leagues. So I want to know your guys' thoughts on whether or not you think the future of the sport is having these big branded city names, i.e. the Bradfords, i.e. the globally, Toulouse versus Toronto is something of interest to the globe because that is what in media terms people call cut through. But equally, the heart, you know, where the heartland lies, i.e. the Batleys, the Dewsburys, the Hunslets, where, you know, these teams in such great tradition is involved. What is, you know, where do you guys stand on that divide? Do you think that more resources should be invested into those traditional clubs, or more resources should be invested into the top line?
I think the level of resource should be pretty equal across the board. I mean, we talk about funding in League One and Super League, and I think it's only fair the League One clubs get their funding. I know there's been a push to move away from that. The Championship clubs deserve their funding, and the Super League clubs deserve their funding off the back of that. So everyone deserves a slice of the pie, or obviously at the higher level they'd get a bigger slice of the pie. And I think then if the more city rugby league teams you have, which obviously means a bigger population, a bigger area to go at, I think the cream would eventually rise to the top anyway. So if all is well at Bradford, for example, over the next 3 or 4 years, you would expect they would get themselves in a position to be pushing for Super League again. York, another big city, which really, when you look at it, is quite an amazingly untapped area for rugby league. It's a huge city with so much going on.
I mean, it does have a rich history in rugby league.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of clubs have been around for a long time.
Us three, our generation of York, we've not really seen anything, have we, from York? And then you've got your Leeds.
It's coming the old.
Yeah, and then you've got your Leeds's, your London's, obviously places like Wigan, which are obviously rich rugby league
yeah,
towns.
Yeah, but the point, I think the point that a lot of, I guess those Super League clubs are trying to make is that there's not enough money to go around.
Well, find a way to get more money into the game. You don't take it from the clubs who need it.
Yeah,
you know, ridiculous. This is the argument,
yeah, but,
right?
Yeah, but it's like, what comes first, the egg or the chicken? Well, now, I am definitely both. I'm a traditionalist. My heart lies with those traditional clubs. Equally, I've done a degree in marketing, sports marketing particularly, and understanding that more money will come into the game if you have those bigger brands involved. Mm. If the showcase piece that is going to be of higher interest is going to be at that level. So what comes first? Do you invest it down, or do you make a short-term sacrifice to invest upwards to grow the game at that level and then have it set that it will trickle down?
Well, the argument is taking 14 lots of £75,000 out of League One and deregulating the competition. That is a factual thing which has been mooted at a Super League meeting and chaired by one or two club owners.
We'll sign the death now for a handful of clubs.
Now, my response to that would be, these clubs are spending, at the minute, £1.8 million on the salary cap. It's going to go up to £1.9, then £2 million. What is £75,000 doing? I mean, it's pretty much a one-for-one. There's 12 Super League clubs, there's 14 League One clubs. So you're taking 14 lots of 75 and sharing it across the 12 Super League clubs. So what is 75, 80 grand changing at a Wigan, at a Leeds? What, that isn't going to allow them to go out and sign Jonathan Thurston or Billy Slater. Reality, they're probably going to spend that money on topping up the contracts of the players they've already got. And the byproduct of that is that you lose Hunslet, Oldham, Bradford, Whitehaven, Workington, etc., etc. My view has always been there is certainly some fat that you could trim in League One, clubs that don't bring a fair return on investment, and you don't need to be a genius to work out which clubs they are. But the clubs who are making strides off the field, which you've seen with Bradford and you've seen with York at the weekend, I'm sure you'll see with Doncaster, Sunday when
Carl
they go
Hall
for a
and
big
the boys
crowd.
At Doncaster,
yeah, Carl's
they run
doing a great
a real
job.
Tight ship.
You're killing those clubs. And you can even go above to the next level in the Championship as well. You know, if you're forgetting about your Batleys and Dewsburys. Look, are they ever going to be Super League clubs? Probably not, but the value of a strong second tier just can't be underestimated, because if you had this top-heavy approach of, right, we're going with 12 clubs and everyone else can just die, what happens if one of those 12 clubs gets into financial trouble? Who replaces them? There's no thinking about the greater good of the game with all of this, unfortunately.
Yeah, and what about from a player's point of view? If you're to say the League One clubs are just completely wiped, what happens to all those players? You know, these young players who are maybe not quite good enough to play Super League or play a high-end Championship.
Alex Wormsley,
they've all dropped down.
Or some of those guys that need a few years to mature into those.
For example, if you wipe the League One competition right now, where would we? What would we do? I just think that's it's growing the game at the top end, but you can't just wipe out the competition. There's players, the staff, fans, you know, there's no answer to that. I don't think. I don't think that's the right move.
What you're trying to say is amateur rugby league will not benefit the Super League clubs. There needs to be a stronger professional talent pool.
Needs to be a stronger professional talent pool, and these clubs wanted to take the money off League One clubs. I think they need to work harder at making themselves more money. There's clubs who get less fans than us wanting to take money off us when they're not running self-sufficient themselves. Do you know what I mean? They're not generating the money themselves. They're not generating the interest in their city as it is. So, you know, what's an extra $75,000 going to do?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, maybe that extra £75,000 will be spent on marketing.
If you were talking like 7-8 million quid's worth of funding going into Super League, they might have a case, but it's 12, 14 lots of £75,000. I mean, it's what is it? It's not even a million quid. Yeah. It's £900,000. It's not going to make a difference, unfortunately.
No, it's not. All right, we're going to go to a break now. When we come back, we're going to have a look around the sport. This conversation is going to go on and go on for a while. So stick with us right here on the Robbie Hunter Paul Show.
This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2. On 12:78 and 15:30 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Kia ora and welcome back to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show, live in the studio with Elliot Mintella, Ross Peltier and Aaron Bauer. And in this section we're going to have a look around the sport and see what are the hottest topics going on. We've got a little bit of a he said, she said. Brian McDermott coming out after the game last weekend and saying at the moment referees are basically just spending too much time on the detail and stopping the flow of the games. And I've got to kind of agree with him. There's too much detailed refereeing going on at the moment, which for me stutters and stops it. Steve Ganson's come back with a reply stating actually not directly to Brian McDermott, but he's saying he's getting a bit frustrated. He feels or believes that coaches are purposefully encouraging their players to milk penalties, which is putting extra pressure on the guys in the middle. Come on, boys, over to you guys. What do you think, thoughts about that?
I don't think coaches are putting pressure on anyone to milk penalties like these obstructions and stuff.
You just do it yourself.
Yeah, everyone's sick of these obstructions and stuff that are happening now. Every video ref decision, can I check obstruction on a defender on the other side of the pitch when they've scored it corner? Like, it's getting ridiculous. Sometimes players try to get an edge, like, you know, when if people try to hold you in a tackle, you know, for a penalty, or, you know, you'll try to hold someone in a tackle, but that's going to happen in all aspects of sport.
This is one thing I've noticed. Two elements are two. On TV games, if someone takes any chop around the face, around the head, the player will stay down. And if there's anything that kind of can be suggested, it'd be anything like a crusher tackle, the player will stay down. Every single time, as soon as they get the penalty, that player's back on their feet again. Back on their feet. Yeah, all good.
Yeah.
Let's go.
It's almost like a bit like football, isn't it?
And I think that's what Steve Ganson's talking about. Yeah. But I don't think... I'm with you on this, Ross. I don't think a coach is saying that. I think it's just gamesmanship by the players.
Yeah, I wouldn't particularly say it's the coaches. I think as a player, if you know you can gain an advantage by doing that, I think it's quite obvious, like you've been saying, the Sky Games, it's pretty obvious that people are staying down, or you don't see it when it's not televised and they're gaining a penalty from it, aren't they? So they're going to keep doing it. Unless the referees just scrap it, then players are just going to keep, you know, taking advantage of the system because it's there to be taken advantage of.
Well, it's the referee's job to think whether it's a foul penalty or not. If you don't think it's a penalty, don't give it. If you think it's a penalty, give it.
This is an interesting one because, Sam Tompkins, right back in the day, he used to do the one, you know, where you trap your arm in?
Yeah.
Traps the defender's arm in, and he used to get away with it all the time. Unless you've been in a tackle and done that sort of contact work, you don't really know what sort of, you know, you got guys that are standing there that were trying to just basically, they're lifting Sam off the ground. Mm. Yeah, their arm trapped in there. I'm not trying to pull the ball out here. And then the referees would give, award Sam the penalty for holding onto the ball, holding down. And they used to get my goat. But unless you've been a player and you've played in those situations, it's hard for a referee to make that call. Do you not think?
It's hard for a ref to make a call, but you know it's in every level of sport. You're going to get someone try to get an advantage with a milk a penalty in any sport. Do you know what I mean? So I see it as down to you've got to make a call as a ref.
Yeah, that end of the day, that's his job, isn't it? He's got to make calls. He gets paid to make calls, and that's his job. So, if he's just got to do, he's got to make the right call more often than not. And wherever they have been doing, that's not up for me to say, is it? But yeah, that's the ref's job. He's got to make calls.
I mean, Adam Cuthbertson was kind of agreeing with Steve Gans, and he think there's a little too much gamesmanship going on by the players themselves. Look, you guys can get away with a lot more than the referees can really handle, especially with there only being one referee on the field. You know, it's not like down under where you've got one guy that can manage the ruck and the other guy that can get back and make sure everyone gets on side.
But then you've seen what's happening over there. Penalties are killing games now. Yeah, like, penalties down under, it's getting ridiculous. Like, for everything, I think recently we've started to look too in-depth for stuff and not let the game just flow.
So you're 100... So you're in this argument, this discussion point, you think McDermott is correct in saying that they're overanalyzing the detail of the game?
To a degree.
They're refereeing too much to the letter of the law as opposed to allowing the game to be more of an entertaining spectacle and letting the game flow.
Yeah, and a bit, I think players as well, like, if someone try to milk a penalty and they get it, in the day, if the refs give the decision, he's given the decision.
But do you think that there's also been an increase of gamesmanship going on by the players?
I think it's always been there, personally. I think it's always been there, but I think this year refereeing's been scrutinised a lot on it recently. Mm. So I think that's contributed to it.
And remember, Ross, they're people too. Aaron, what are your thoughts on this?
It was no surprise to see the head of the referees come out and defend the referees. I mean, what were we expecting there? You know, it's not exactly breaking news. I think McDermott's got a point, to be honest. You pay money, fans spend a lot of money, and my belief's always been, rightly or wrongly, you don't pay to watch the referees. I want to see the game flow, and he made the point in the press conference on Thursday night that you want to see teams go set for set with each other for 10, 15 minutes. That's where you find out who the better side is. When the game's non-stop, they're returning the ball time after time, there's no breaks in play, that's when you find out who the best teams are. And he made the point that the games are refereed a little bit differently at the end of the year as they are to the start. Now, that might not be true because the stats show that they're actually very similar, the amount of penalties that are awarded. But certainly this year, it's felt like the referees...
No, I know what he's talking about.
No, I do.
Definitely. But the different mandates that come out.
Yeah, yeah.
Referees come out and they normally have a conversation with all the coaches, and all the coaches agree that they're gonna look at a particular area of the game to improve the speed of the play, the ball, whatever it is. And then referees go away and they get trained to work on those areas. So you could argue we're doing it, you know, the coaches are doing it to themselves, because these areas that they're working on normally are agreed by the coaches themselves.
Yeah, that's true. But this year in particular, it's felt like there's a lot more niggling things being picked up on. I mean, I watched an NRL game this morning and there was, you know, what I would have assumed, having watched rugby over here, as laying on, but over there, it almost flows a little bit better. The lads are right that it's getting a little bit worse over there, but they're still like different games to us in terms of the way the games are refereed. And you need that uniformity across Super League, the NRL and international rugby, and the games are refereed completely differently over here. There's two stop start. At times, they're just boring. You know, you want to watch teams rip into each other and lay skill on and find out who the better teams
and
are. Not
that athleticism.
Yeah, not have
you
the
know,
referee.
Probably what we should be doing more, and I think this is what's happened down under also, is that They need to be asking the fans. Now, our sport is a professional sport, and it broke away from rugby union. The DNA of this sport broke away from rugby union back in 1895 purely and simply because of money. And it was the players coming out of the mills, coming out of the mines, and get paid for their broken time, so to speak. And that meant that they were able to do that because they had paying people coming through the turnstiles watching an entertaining game. The game's DNA has changed. It has evolved to make it more of an entertainment spectacle. And I thought, I found it quite interesting reading an article from Down Under with a refereeing Down Under where the fans were saying, stop blowing your whistle. Stop, you know, take the pee out of the whistle. The fans are saying it. And the head of the referees Down Under, they come out and they said, no. We're doing our job. This is our job. And I think actually you're missing the point. You're missing the point of what rugby league is all about. It's an entertainment. It's especially professional rugby league. It's all about entertaining supporters, because that's what makes it professional and what makes them end up being in the middle of the park in the first place. Yes, I do think that the players are an important stakeholder in it, and also the game as a whole is an important stakeholder, but no one can be more important than the supporters in this regard. I think the supporters are as frustrated as the players are and the coaches are, I guess. So maybe there just needs to be a better balance found. Okay, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll have a look at all the top upcoming games in the round this coming weekend. But before we do, let's have a look at the roads.
On 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Kia ora and welcome back to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show live at Pulse 2 Studios. This is the last segment of the show. We're in the studio with Aaron Bauer, Ross Poutier and Elliot Minchella. Boys, let's have a look at the upcoming games this weekend. And I think the first game that we're going to see tomorrow evening, Salford on the back of a massive, massive high after pumping Wakefield 36 points to six or something like that. Saints, so they're in the zone. They haven't moved from being in the zone all season long. So how's this going to turn out? It is at the Red Devils. Is that the AJ Bell Stadium at home? St. Helens versus Salford. Is that the AJ Bell Stadium?
Saints are going to kill up, man. Man, Barber's going to just do his thing. Salford will have no Robert Lowe.
You did say this about Wakefield last week and they got pumped.
Nah, but that's Wakefield, isn't it? This is Saints, you know, Ben Barber. Look what they've done to Huddersfield at weekend, you know what I mean?
But to that discussion point, Huddersfield are not travelling well at the moment.
Yeah, well, you know, they're not travelling well, but we lost to a smaller margin of a top two Super League team, so I think we're better than Huddersfield, aren't we?
Now, back to the game.
Are you more confident than Huddersfield?
I think it's going to be quite a close game, actually. I can see it going right down to the last 10, 15 minutes, but I think Saints are going to have enough.
Mini moves quickly along from that statement. You've got to understand, ladies and gents, what Mini's doing there, he doesn't want the extra pressure on him and the rest of his teammates. Ross can pour it out all on himself, is in an individual game.
Yeah. So he's quickly along. And he's only on for 20 minutes a game, so.
Mini has to stay out there for 80 minutes to cop all the baseball bats and everything that's coming at him.
Nah,
he goes on for 10 minutes, have a tackle.
They save him for me.
Falls on his stomach.
Mate, every time I come on a pitch, the whole team just talks me up. They grow another level, so. That's what I enjoyed about it. No one was trying to get at me, so I enjoyed it.
No
one bothered. So, yeah.
But yeah.
Did it feel lonely, though?
Saints win, Ben Barber, that trick.
Yeah.
Patrick.
Easy.
Oh, wow.
I'm liking Salford. I'm liking what they're doing on a tight, well, compared to everyone else, a tiny budget. They're really punching above the weight, you know, and like we touched on off air, they did it for 50 minutes without Louis last week. I think Shorrocks is going to play six tomorrow night, which will obviously be an interesting one to see how he goes, because he's never really had that sustained run in a side at this level. So he's going to be up against Lomax and Richardson, obviously, who are both playing really well. The only glimmer for Salford is that there's no Roby again. They are a different side without Roby. I know they won well last week, but Huddersfield are abysmal at the moment. But I'd give Salford a chance on any given day. Ian Watson's doing an incredible job. If I'm being pushed, I think it might be a step too far for them tomorrow, because Saints is a real step up in terms of anyone who they'll have played recently. Back Saints, and obviously it's another chance to see Benny Barber in action, which, you know, we never know how many chances we'll get.
You've got a man crush on Benny Barber, haven't you? Class. Say it loud, say it proud. I have as well. He's just...
Nothing wrong with that.
You know what I mean? Yeah. He's box office. When St. Helens are playing on TV, I'm going to watch it because I want to watch what he comes up with. He's coming up with a box office play every game. Mm. It might just be one. It's not normally just one. It's normally two or three. And, you know, if he's in the zone, you'll come up with six to seven box office plays. I'm not just talking about good plays. I mean box office. Mm. And he's definitely not disappointed this season. But on that note, Salford is sitting in at seventh position at the moment. Do you think that anybody sort of sitting in and around them, so Carsford, Leeds, Rhinos, could be susceptible to Salford right now as they're performing?
No.
Did I name the two wrong teams?
Cass, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, Leeds have obviously... it's still quite early in the season. I mean, look, Leeds have lost two in a row and they were in the top four and now they're six, and you just, you know, you're just questioning whether someone who were in the bottom four a fortnight ago can overtake them. That's how frenzied it is. I mean, I know obviously Wakefield are below Salford now, but they've got a run of games coming up that they'll probably fancy. I think they play Widnes twice as well. They've got that game postponed. So, and even Huddersfield, the message at Huddersfield today was, look, I know we lost by 50-60 last week, but we've got a run of games coming up, and if we can rack some momentum together and some form, I think eighth is still there for someone. I'd probably still say Salford are in that bracket of five with Widnes, Hull, KR, Huddersfield and Catalan to try and get that last spot in the eight. I would probably say over 23 games, Wakefield would be too good to get sucked in to a race to avoid the bottom four. But it's a crazy league. You know, you saw last year, I think Salford were running second after 21-22 games, and they just fell out of the four for the split. But anything can happen. I mean, it's a crazy league. The only given at the minute, by the looks of it, is that Saints and Wigan are the top two. Everything else is completely up for grabs.
I'm with you on that. And yeah, you just touched on Castleford. On Wakefield. So let's just fast forward to Friday night, the televised game. Cass at home to Wakey. Wakey on the back of getting pumped. They've obviously got to turn out. These games are always massive local derbies. These are the ones that... It's another one of those situations like Wigan, St. Helens, the old school Bradford Bulls, Hull FC, Hull KR. It doesn't matter if you lose every game all season as long as you win this one to a lot of their supporters. So how do you see that one going, especially with Castleford having so many injuries and Wakefield knowing that they need to turn a performance around?
I think Wakey are going to bounce back, but I just think Castle are going to have too much. I think it's going to be very close again, but I think Castle on their own patch, they've got too many important players and good players. I think they'll get the win. But I think Wakey will come back. Obviously, they were disappointing last week, weren't they, against Salford? But it should be a good game. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, looking forward to it. You know, Cass, Wakey, you know, always a quality game. You know, a lot of passion in them games. I think Wakey will be, you know, on back of that win, they want to set some stuff right. But I think Cass seem like they might be there for the taking. Like, this is a time where they might be able to get them. So, you know, it'd be an interesting game, that one.
Cass have got the advantage of being at home. I mean, that pitch is completely unique, isn't it? There's not another one like it in terms of the size of it. It's smaller than most, and Cass know how to play it like clockwork. They train on it. They play on it 13 times a year. So that gives them a leg up from the start. The interesting thing for Wakefield is that they've rung the changes, haven't they? They've hooked the likes of Liam Finn, Scott Gricks, Justin Horrow, and he's bringing in the kids, in effect, Ryan Hampshire, Max Jowett, who've done
Didn't
well.
Didn't Liam Finn just pin another deal?
They're in talks about one. That's what Chris Chester said last week. So, but Cass on their own turf, I mean, I know they've obviously got some problems on the wing, not made any easier by what's happened or what's come to light about Gary Lowe in the last 24 hours. So they'll probably have to put Michael Shenton on the wing, I would suspect, and Wardle to centre, but Cass at home... it always takes a special team to beat Cass at home, I think. So I'll be back in the Tigers.
And it's going to be a volatile in atmosphere and environment, just purely and simply, just because of the history team between the Wakefield area, because obviously Castleford is part of that postcode. Okay, for me, the next biggest game of the round, it's got to be Bradford Bulls travelling to Doncaster.
There we go.
This is it.
Here we go, let's fight some shots here.
Elliot's just taking a breath. He's like, oh, here we go.
Nah, I'm
he's getting nervous.
Nah, I'm not firing no shots here. Donny, I've heard that anyone who's not playing for Hull are available for Donny. There's talks of Joe Westerman playing for Doncaster against us. So, you know, they'll have a strong
look,
side.
Look, that can
so.
Help, but it can also hinder. You've got a team like Doncaster that's been travelling very well, they've got their combinations worked out, you kind of think, well, I'd love to have a player with the class of Joe Westerman come in and play in our squad because what he can add to the squad. But a lot of the time, and I've been a part of these type of setups where you've got dual registration players coming down, they upset the apple cart. An apple cart that you've got works better because it's synergy and it's, you know, it's a sum of the parts and better than all that. You know, so... effectively, that can take away as opposed to add to what Doncaster could perform against you.
Yeah, that's true. It could upset the camp there. There'll be a good side, but I'm confident we can go and get the win. You know, I've always got bad memories that keep me up, but hopefully create some good memories.
Why is that?
Every time I've played there, it's just been like lost by like 2 points or something like that. So hopefully we'll change all that when I go with Bradford.
I mean, it's a big stadium as well,
yeah,
isn't it?
It always so, feels so empty as well. Yeah. Like, it feels very empty. There's no atmosphere when you play there. It's like it's a bit weird because you can just hear everyone's voice on the pitch echoing. Mm. So yeah, it's a bit, yeah. But Bradford will take a lot of fans.
And this is a big game round. For the Bulls as well. So I think a lot of the Bulls fans will know this is the one that will sort of separate the leading group, so to speak. This will give you, if you come away with the win this weekend, this providing the points for and against with York, and they don't put 100 points on someone,
you'd be looking at that.
Well, they might do that. Potentially you guys will go into that first place spot. That's what you guys are working towards, I'm guessing.
Yeah, of course. We want to be top. And if we beat Doncaster on Sunday, that would have beat Doncaster and York away as well on their patch. And we're confident we'd do it back at Oddsall. So it is a big game, but it's not a season-defining game. It's not, you know, if we lose that game, it's not going to be the end of the world. But don't get me wrong, we're going out there full guns blazing to beat them. The fair play to them. They've started really well, so be interesting to see what sort of team they put out. Like I said, there's some Hull lads maybe, but that could work in our advantage, so we'll see what happens. Hopefully a big following by Bradford again and get behind us.
What are your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, like Ross touched on, I mean, obviously...
How big of a banana skin is this for Doncaster? It's not a banana skin Doncaster performed this season. So how dangerous is this for the Bulls?
Yeah, real danger. You know, it's certainly not a banana skin because they're both level records. You know, they're the two of the three outstanding clubs in the league, I'd say, along with York. So what's interesting is probably, like Ross said, how many Hull lads they call upon, you know, will they be tempted to call on a few more because it's such a big game? But then only a week ago they pushed Featherstone incredibly close. I mean, they came really close to dumping them out of the cup and they're running second in the championship. So that's the interesting dynamic for me. I mean, I'm sure there's no shortage of motivation from Bradford's end. John's obviously done really well at getting them up for big games, as you've seen with the York game on the opening weekend. But it's the standout game outside Super League, arguably. Again, it's a bit of a trend, isn't it? You're looking in League One for the bigger games and the better games, and this is certainly another one.
All right, I'm going to pick one more game outside the Super League, and that is Toronto facing off against Halifax.
Yeah, in London as well.
Just a quick one on that one.
Toronto, they're starting to click into gear, aren't they? I think they're
looking... So Halifax, sir?
Yeah,
I mean... QLT this week, though. He can't play against Toronto.
That's right.
Oh, that's right. So,
and he was really good, apparently, against Dewsbury. So... I back Toronto.
All right, that's us for tonight. My thanks for the boys being in the studio. My thanks for you wherever you are listening this evening, and especially if you've been watching on live Periscope as well. Cheers. We love you.
To today's show and all previous Robbie Hunter Paul shows at pulse2.co.uk. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.